fallen, Lord judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
Yo, 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 what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Told, as I take you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers about what it's like to do that damn thing. Oh my God, today, big, big episode, big guest, long awaited guest. We've been trying to put this together for a little while. There were some rescheduling, some cancellations, and after talking to Mr. Ryan Key, that's the man this week, I totally understand. This guy is a busy, busy man. So much going on. This is a great, great episode. And I gotta be honest, I tried to hook this up a couple years ago, back when Yellow Card was doing, you know, their farewell tour, and I was met with a big denial. I was told it wasn't happening, Yellow Card wasn't doing press, so I kind of laid this whole idea to rest, and I didn't think this was going to happen, and I am so glad it finally did, because this episode is awesome. Before we get into that, in a few short minutes, some things I want to remind you of. The first one is, you can always get in touch with me anytime. You can email me. That's probably the easiest way. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. You can add me on social media. It's at Shane Told, or the show at LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N, on Twitter, or at LeadSingerSyndrome on Instagram. Make sure you check out Facebook, too. Still a thing, believe it or not. Facebook still exists. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. So yeah, check it out. Like the page. Do all that stuff. If you don't like the show, you know what? We got an option for you, too. You can call the hate line. You can call, leave me a message of hate. It is 1-657-666-HATE. Yeah, give me a call, leave a message. I'll roll out a clip on the show from time to time. So, hey, you never know. You could even be on the show if you make it good and funny. Yes. So call the hate line or send me an email, whatever you want. I do try to get back to everyone, but I do always read everything that I get sent or tagged in or whatever. Thanks to everybody who hit me up in the last week. A lot of conversation about Ben from Armor for Sleep and having him come, you know, virtually back from the dead to be on the show. It was such a great episode. If you missed that one, go back, check it out. We got like another 175 episodes you can check out as well. And if you've listened to them all, we have an option for you. And it's called the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Sometimes I do podcasts with non-lead singers. And if you want to listen to them, you just got to join the club. And it's not that much money per month, as little as $6 a month. And that is, you know, what helps keep this thing going, what helps keep this thing free, enabling me to have guests like Ryan from freaking Yellow Card this week. Yes. So if you're a member of the All Access Club and you know who you are, and I know who you are, thank you very much for allowing me to do this stuff and put this out to the rest of the people for free. Those freeloaders. Don't worry, this show will always be free. That is not an issue, but I do appreciate all the love that I get with the All Access Club. And the members get cool shit. You get a welcome letter from me. You get patches shipped to your house. Question and answer sessions with me. And access to an amazing community of like-minded people. And you are going to make some friends. So the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I just ask that you check it out because it really is the reason that I'm able to do this thing and bring you episodes like this one. So thank you very much. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. What's up with me, you ask? Well, right now I'm just hanging in my backyard. You can probably hear the birds chirping. It is a beautiful June day in Canada. And I'm gearing up to go on tour with my band Silverstein alongside August Burns Red, some of my best friends in the world. I am so excited for this. We also got Silent Planet on the run. Garrett, he's trying to make a run for my job or something. No, I think he wants to come up and hang on stage with a little smile in your sleep. Garrett, I know you're out there. I know you're listening. Let's make this happen, boy. Yeah, let's do this shit. So yes, tickets available for that tour now, wherever people buy tickets these days. Check it out. ABR, Silverstein, and Silent Planet all across America and Canada. It is going to be awesome. And in a couple of weeks, there's going to be some more big Silverstein news, which I'm super excited about. And I will let you know on the podcast, of course, just like I always do. Well, enough about that. Enough about me. Let's get into this week's episode and my conversation with William Ryan Key.
Hey, dude.
Hey, man. What's up?
Oh, nothing, man. Just swimming in it. So busy, I can't see straight, dude.
Oh, well, that's sometimes a good thing. I don't know. Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time, you know, out of your busy schedule to, you know, shoot the shit with me.
Yeah, dude. Sorry it's taking so long to get it going.
No, it's good, you know? I think these things happen for a reason, you know? I think, like, every time that happens with a, you know, another guest or something, somebody can't do it or somebody forgets or whatever happens, it's like every time it gets rescheduled, I'm like, this is better. There's just more shit to talk about now.
That's true. I've certainly been through a bit of a gauntlet since we were supposed to do this originally. So.
Right. Well, talk to me about the gauntlet. I remember when I think of gauntlet, that word. I think of that Nintendo game that was in like the black cartridge. Do you remember that game?
No.
Okay. It was like, there was like these random Nintendo games, like RBI Baseball was another one that had like
a black cartridge.
Yeah. Instead of the gray
one. Yeah. Okay.
And it was like one of those games.
I remember the different colored cartridges, but I don't remember the gauntlet game.
Oh, the game was so sick. Yeah. It was rad.
I was a lucky kid and I had a Nintendo, like when they first came out '80, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoyed it for sure, but I was such a like, imaginative, like outdoor kind of like world building in my mind playing kind of kid. I would use it, but my parents were never like, okay, time to get off the Nintendo. You know what I mean? Like I was never like addicted to it at all.
No,
I
had one pretty early too. I remember my sister and I my sister's 7 years older than me, so she did most of the financing of it, but we had to buy it ourselves, you know? And we got it pretty early on too. We didn't have I remember that came up with the fucking robot. That was the crazy thing. You played that Gyromite game with the robot that you plugged into that was so weird. But I agree with you, man. Like, I was more excited to go outside and play road hockey and baseball and shit with my friends than, like, nowadays, like, it's crazy. Kids spend, like, hours and hours and hours playing.
Huh. Dude, I can't imagine.
It wasn't like that. Yeah, no.
Like, I'm not in the arena of parenting, and I don't have any plans to be.
Me neither.
But, like, I cannot imagine that part of it, dude. Like, trying to curtail the digital influence on your kids. I cannot imagine I don't know. I don't even really talk to my friends about it because I don't want to get into an argument. You know what I mean? I don't want to try to be like, well, this is my opinion about kids and the digital age. And then and be like, but I also have no frame of reference because you are raising human beings and I am not. So I try not to bring it up, but between another person that doesn't have any, I guess I can talk to you about it. I can't imagine it, dude.
No, the closest thing I have is I have three nephews, but they're all way more down with playing outside and stuff too. Like, they're not, sure they have like my one nephew got an iPhone and it's so cute when he FaceTimes me and stuff. But, you know, they're way more excited to go outside and skateboard and they have these little ramps that they take their scooters off and stuff. Like, it's just the same kind of shit I would do when I was a kid. So
yeah.
I don't think it's hopeless for the youth of today.
I don't know. I don't think it's hopeless either. And I don't think the gaming systems actually are, which is what started the conversation here.
Right,
but
right.
I, that's not really necessarily even what would freak me out as a parent. I think the phones and stuff is more, that's more of just like,
yeah.
You're just, your kid is just unleashed, dude, when they're not with you. You know, it's crazy to me.
Totally.
But
yeah.
Anyways, the Gauntlet.
The Gauntlet. Yes.
So I put out these two EPs last year, you know, under my full name, and decided to take a stab at doing a, you know, solo artist career, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
There's no less pretentious way to say it than
that's
solo
what it
artist.
Is, man. Yeah, that's what it is.
So, yeah. So I put out these two EPs, and I had a couple of incredible tours last year that really set me up for this year in a great way. I got to go out with Newfound Glory and Mayday Parade on separate occasions. And I'll try to keep it brief on that. It's that, like, so incredible that I got the opportunity to play with on those tours in front of that many people.
Yeah.
Right out of the gates. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, just starting first tour, 2,000 people a night, you know?
Yeah.
So that was amazing. But if you've listened to the EPs, you know, you can hear that I am with my own music trying to sort of get away from those types of tours.
Absolutely. Sure.
You know, the pop rock stuff and the, you know, I'm definitely going in a different direction. So it was amazing to get to play on those tours. And I think it really set me up to go out on my own this year, which is what I'm getting to the Gauntlet. It's something that, like, I did those tours and I got to, you know, attract people to the new music I'm making. Folks definitely realizing along the way, like, man, if I'm going to do this, like, I really have to try to get on some tours that are more in the vein of, like, the singer-songwriter post-rock kind of stuff I'm trying to do, to, like, really connect with people who are not waiting for the punk rock show to start, which is totally understandable on those tours, you know? So anyway, so this year, after Mayday Parade, I had the holidays off, and Miss Wildlife and I were going to co-headline in Europe, UK. So that's really the beginning of this journey that I've been on this year, which when I finish with this, I hope you're not exhausted from listening to it, but... So, like, mid-January, I left for Russia. I did two shows in Russia on my own before meeting up with This Wildlife, and we did a full full Europe and UK run, which went until the very, like, February 10th or something like that. I got home, had, I believe, 8 days off, and then left for this U.S. headlining tour of mine. So 2 weeks, maybe a week and a half home, and then I was right back out in the States. And, you know, doing this touring like this is like, you know, I'm back to basics, man. It's like I'm driving the van. Like I pulled 15,000 miles twice this, you know, in the last year in the van. And, you know, it's like I'm fully transparent in saying that, like, it's, you know, going from yellow card for almost 20 years in a tour bus with a full crew back to the van and driving and humping the gear every day. It's tough, man. And, like, you know, I'm fully aware of kind of, like, how inadequate I might have been trying to do that at the beginning, because I would just, it had been 15 years since I'd done it. And I'm a spoiled brat from my band being as successful as it was. So,
dude. Lead singer syndrome. This is what we talk about.
Exactly. The name of your show is what I've been through. But I, you know, it's been, but it was, dude, it was great. The grind was so good, man. It was really humbling and really, you know, kept me focused, like hyper focused on the job, because I just was so responsible for every aspect of it. And I mean, I had some other dudes, some really, really good friends of mine playing in the band with me, on the road with me, and a really good friend of mine that's been my guitar tech since like 2011. I'm still able to somehow keep dragging him along with me, and he like is, you know, just saves my life out there. He's the best. And so I have a great team of people around me, and that made it awesome. But there, you know, there were days for sure where it was just like, man, I don't know, dude, I'm not 25.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can withstand, you know, this grind, you know.
Totally.
But then, you know, you get through it, and that the tour ends, you're like, you did it, and it's like a milestone, you know? But
of course. And like, because it's new music and it's your music, you know, and it's what you wanted to do, and you don't have to worry about anyone else in your band or opinions, like, this is you 100%. It's under your full name. There's a certain sort of excitement that goes into it, which is why you're like, Yeah, I'll like drive a van for 8 hours like straight, yeah. And I'll take a flight to Russia and whatever. Like, I'll do all this stuff just because I'm so excited about this new music I'm making. So it's for almost like you're going back to when you were, I mean, not even 25, when you were like more like, you know, 20. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the shows, you know, the shows that did really well. I mean, obviously there were a few beaters. I wasn't expecting anyone to show up in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Right.
But the New York show and the Philly show and the Boston show and the Orange County show and the LA show, you know, the ones that really were successful shows for me, like they felt like that. I felt like those shows back in the early 2000s when we first, you know, Yellow Card first started selling out shows or packing rooms, right. Whether it was sold out or not, whatever. But like, just the feeling of the energy in the room of everybody kind of being there, feeling like they were part of something new and no idea what to expect. I mean, you know, I think the majority of people coming to shows had listened to the EPs and knew they were coming to listen to my new music, but you certainly had spillover of people that were coming and not knowing and having any idea what they were walking into, but,
totally.
But were still there to support, you know? And so the energy in the room was really cool every night and we got through it and it was awesome. It was hard. It was really hard work, but it was really worth it. And I, no sleep. The last show was April 2nd. I got on a plane to Japan on April 3rd. The next day, I literally flew out. I slept in my own bed one time on April 2nd, and I left the next day to go to Japan. So I got an offer last year to produce a record for a band in Japan.
Oh, wow.
And we're not like releasing who the band and stuff. They have a plan to roll out, so I can't say who it is. But it's they're a great band. They're like super pop punk band in Japan. And so they brought me in to produce the album, but I got to do it in Japan. So I left for Japan the day after the tour ended. I was in Japan for 30 days.
Wow.
And then I had the plan was, you know, go home after that. I had I was going to L.A. To play. I've been also playing guitar for Newfound Glory.
Yeah.
If everyone doesn't know that.
Yep.
I started doing that last year on the sick tour, and that's still a thing that they're interested in having me do. So
cool.
I'm enjoying it, and it's been an awesome, like super fun outlet for me to like hang with my friends, but also like still play, you know, rock, like full blown rock music and bang my head on stage. And that's been really killer. So anyways, we had some shows booked in LA. So I was coming back from Japan to play those shows in LA. With Newfound for their new record release, and then going home. Well, we didn't finish the album in Japan.
Oh.
We needed like a few more days to go, so the label paid for me to come all the way back. So I flew from Japan to LA
God,
for 5 days.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, Japan to LA for 5 days, and then while I was in LA, and offered to play this college show in Chicago, and it was just. It was like, there's no, I have to go play that show. I don't know how they're affording this. I had to take it. So so I had to go back to Japan for like 2.5 days, working until like 2 a.m, finishing the album, turn around, left the airport that day, right from the set of the music video, and flew to Chicago.
Oh my God.
I wake up the next morning, get a rental car, I drive 3 hours to this college, play the show, sleep, and now I'm here I am in Nashville.
Oh,
kind of
gosh.
Relaxing. I've got so much on my plate, getting ready for Newfound Glory. We're leaving next week for like the full summer.
Wow.
I'm selling my house here in Nashville, so I'm dealing with packing that up and all that crap. Just nonstop, dude. Nonstop.
Dude, that is wild, and what a story. I mean, I guess that's just the way it is these days for you. I mean,
I think I'm more, I would say that I'm more busy. You know, I've got more going on and I'm more all over the place and just constantly moving than I ever was, even in Yellow Card, with the exception of maybe the Ocean Avenue cycle, which obviously was a mental shit show for it all. You know, it was just crazy. But that was like 19 months on the road, no break. That was insane. But other than that, I think this is the most activity I've had going on professionally in my entire life. And I'm really grateful for that.
And you're enjoying it, hopefully.
Oh, I'm loving it, man.
It's like you don't even have time to really realize if you're enjoying it or not, right? It's just like,
well,
I gotta do this thing.
I mean, sure, and like I said, full transparency. Yeah, there's a lot of days where it sucks, but I remind myself that I'm not sitting in a cubicle and I'm still making music, and I'm all the cliche things you can say about reminding yourself how lucky you are. They're real, and I do, and I really try at this point in my life, in this phase of my life, to be very mindful of that, you know, when the grind starts to kind of wear on me. So just remember, what I'm doing and why I'm doing it for, you know, the reasons I'm doing it, and know that there's reward at the end of it. And to me, it's like, there was sort of a personal challenge for me when Yellow Card ended of, I wallowed for a while, which I think is only natural, kind of like, you know, bathing in self-pity for a bit of like, what am I going to do with my life? And, but once that sort of started to wear off, I feel like there's this like personal challenge for me to, you know, maintain a level of success that feels right to me. And that feels like, you know, the lifestyle I want to live and the career I want to have.
Yeah.
And so it's like making these sacrifices to just really grind it out to me is like, it's very meaningful, because the more opportunities I keep getting and the more things that keep happening are like, okay. And I don't mean this to slight Yellow Card in any way, but it's like, and I know that Yellow Card is the reason I get so many of these opportunities, because of course, it set me up for this point. But there's also sort of this feeling of, okay, I don't need Yellow Card anymore. And that is a huge relief to me, you know, because the more on my own two feet I get, and like the more independent from Yellow Card I get, the more rewarding all of this feels, whether it's going to produce an album in Japan or, you know, or touring on my solo stuff, and, you know, looking ahead this year to making, like, late this year or early next year maybe, but to making a full length album of my own. And I think that distance from Yellow Card is, again, not to spin any negative, you know, vibes towards Yellow Card at all, but it's really healthy for me to be independent of it.
Absolutely. And that's awesome, man. And with Yellow Card and the whole demise of it, I remember it was a couple of years ago, I guess, right? It's been just over 2 years since you played your last show.
Last show was March 25th of 17.
Exactly. And I think I was trying to get you on the show around that time. And what I kind of gathered from what your publicist, your manager, whoever, was that you didn't want to do kind of any press. You kind of wanted put out your statement of, we're doing the last tour, and roll it out exactly how you wanted to roll it out, and play the songs and say, okay, thank you very much, and call it, there it is, a 20-year career, which I had a lot of respect for. Now you seem like now you're so open with talking about just about anything. I just kind of wanted to pick your brain about just kind of what was going on at that time, like how the band just decided to fold, because clearly you weren't done. I mean, a lot of times bands fold. Sorry to keep asking. A lot of bands fold because somebody in the band is just over it. Like they got kids, they don't want to tour, whatever, or you guys don't get along. But clearly you don't have kids. You're working harder than ever. So it wasn't you.
Well, I still, unfortunately, can't, nor do I don't need to like really just disclose all that. So much of what you said in the first part of the question, or, you know, talking about the way we handled the press, that was sort of an in perpetuity like mindset towards press and stuff about it, because all I will say is that in the end, we agreed and we came up with a plan that worked for everyone, you know, and that's the best I can kind of do with it. I think I can say, and I think people know, you know, that it took a while for me to come around to the idea of it. But looking back on it all and the way we did it and the final tour, especially, I'm convinced we did the right thing, you know, and I'll be the first to tell you that I wasn't the one that stood up and had the idea, but, you know, getting on board and moving forward with it, that tour was like one of the most special things, you know, of my whole life and of the whole career of the band. So
yeah,
I think we really are like done. And so like this idea of all the bands that come back 5 years later for reunion or this or that, you know, people say, oh, someone's going to offer them enough money to play a thing or what. I promise that's not going to happen. And so that made the tour like that much more important and meaningful. And I think all the fans that were there, especially, I mean, dude, that last show, the one in Anaheim, everyone that got to be a part of that left with like a moment just frozen.
Right.
But were there inner band, like politics, all those things that went in, but in the end, it was a team effort and a team decision. And hashed out and all worked out and talked through. that's how I got to a mental place of, all right, we're doing this. Let's do it. If we're going to do it, let's do it right.
Right. Absolutely. I got to ask you, so you're the last show in Anaheim. You've got this whole, I mean, maybe you had idea in your head that you were going to do this solo career, that you were going to do all the stuff you've been doing.
I didn't. I swear no. Oh, with all my solo idea, like, that was not my plan at all.
Wow.
Back then.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. then this question's even more important. When you play Ocean Avenue, which I think is the last song at the last show, and that's done, are you just fucking terrified?
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. I went backstage and immediately found, like, the most secluded place I could to just completely melt down. Got that out, you know. It was crazy, dude. Everyone was just sobbing everywhere you looked. It was wild. But I didn't take long after that for a genuine sense of fear to set in, for sure. I mean, it was like, you know, those following weeks and months was like, I thought I was going to be producing records. That was really where I'd focus my energy, you know. And that just not. I don't know if it wasn't panning out or if I wasn't putting enough energy into it. I don't know which one it was.
Right.
I just really discovered that clearly I haven't lost my hustle. I just discovered that wasn't the hustle I wanted, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like being the producer, going to shows every night, meeting the bands and wanting to work on those records. And you know, dude, you're in the business. You know what recording budgets are like in 2019, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not like a veteran established producer that's going to get a rate, you know, a rate that is going to make it where 8 weeks of work, because I'm engineering it all myself. I'm mix prepping it all myself. I'm doing all, you know, I'm not hiring someone to do that stuff for me. So it's like 8 weeks of work at that point. I mean, when I say, you know, I'm not in a cubicle, I'm not a barista, I still get to do all this stuff. Like, yes, it's really fun to make those records, but honest to God, like 8 weeks of work or 10 weeks of work or whatever on a budget that from an independent label, in 2019, 2020, it's like I would make the same living being a barista doing that. You know what I mean?
Sure. Of course you would.
It's pretty wild. So that was a little disheartening as well. It was like, if I had started doing this 15 years ago and had built up a catalog of albums and records and, you know, I would be in a place now that this would be full steam ahead. But what's the more viable option for me to continue to do what I love and make records, but also make a living that I want to let, you know, make. And that just led into this making that first EP and taking that risk. It was like, well, I'm going to take a risk anyways, you know, but this one, like if I put this out, you know, it could be a potentially profitable thing.
Yeah.
I get to go play shows. There's a real lot of upside. And I feel like I realize now that I just really was not done creating, you know.
No.
I wasn't done making music. And so like, I think I'm happiest when I'm making and producing my own stuff more than I am when I'm doing it for other people. And that just became clear over that, like, year period or 2 year period after.
Absolutely.
Yellow Card.
One thing about your first EP that I thought was really interesting was the way you play guitar on it, because it's 100%, if not like, you know, at least 80% like finger style, you know, finger picking style guitar, which, I mean, did Yellow Card have anything like that? Completely
only
different.
On, we had a couple. And we had a B-side a long time ago called When We're Old Men. That was a fingerstyle guitar on a classic, like a nylon guitar.
Yeah.
And then we had a song on the final album called Wrecking Ball. Where is it? I'm a Wrecking Ball? I can't remember. I can't remember the name of the song. But it's the same. Yeah, it's got that like fingerstyle kind of thing. But yeah, the first EP is...
Oh, what is that beeping?
Construction.
Oh,
I'm
that's
walking,
awful.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's killing me.
Yeah, so much for the AirPod canceling the background noise thing. Huh?
I know, it's brutal sometimes on those.
So I what was I saying?
Just about the fingerstyle picking,
guitar. So the first EP is literally there's not a guitar pick on that record.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that's it's natural, like, for me to play that way. When I'm sitting with an acoustic guitar, that's how I play it, you know, and so it's just
cool.
I'm like, all the influences on this stuff, you know, from Elliott Smith to Radiohead to Explosions in the Sky to Coldplay to Mogwai to, you know, just and even then some of the more kind of like alt country, like folk, indie folk stuff like Jason Isbell and those types of dudes. It's like, that stuff really inspires me, and it's stuff that I couldn't fully flush out on a Yellow Card album, you know? So the second I had the opportunity to do it, it was just like flooding out, you know?
I love it. I just thought that was interesting. It must have been challenging. I mean, you've been playing guitar on stage the same way for so long, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's like you got to rethink when you get up there on stage. Oh, I got to finger pick and sing and at the same time.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
Yeah, it's been a learning process for sure, and a lot of rehearsal for me, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of the songs too, if you listen to them back, like in the style that they're written, you know, a lot of the melodies and stuff sort of follow the guitar lines, you know, and I think that's sort of genre specific. If you're writing this kind of acoustic, like I said, like indie folk kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So when I'm writing it, like a big part of writing these songs, honestly, man, is I'll write a riff or something on the acoustic that I love, but then figuring out, okay, well, how am I going to be able to sing and play that at the same time? So in Yellow Card, for example, we demo everything up and then the songs are like fully flushed out musically, and I'll write all the music and melody over the top of them. Because if there's anything I can't play while I'm singing, I just had Mendez.
Yeah, sure.
Ryan Mendez, our guitarist, would play
it,
you know?
Yeah.
Whereas now, that's not an option. So it's a different writing style for me too, where I'm kind of back to the old school style of writing for myself, where I'm writing lyric, melody, and guitar, because I have to ensure that I'm going to be able to play and sing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So I know, you know, you talk about all these influences that you have that, I mean, they're later in life influences, right?
Oh, yeah. Some of them are. Some of them are.
Oh, of course, yeah. But the funny thing about us, and I think we're almost the same age, I think you're a little bit older than me, is we come from a huge influence in, like, skate punk.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring this up partly because happy Lagwagon Day, by the way.
Yes, and to you.
Yes,
I've gotten many text messages.
Yes, May 16th. Joey Capes have been on the show before. We talked all about May 16th and all that. I know Lagwagon is a huge influence of yours growing up in Florida. And I know that you actually took the plunge and you left Florida to join Craig's brother, which is, I was a huge fan of Craig's brother back in the day as well.
Yeah, they were like a sneaky little tooth and nail band with a ripping record.
Like, so good. Such a
so good
band. So I just want to talk. I know this is very far removed from what, you know, you do now, but I want to talk about that influence and just how punk rock kind of became ingrained in you, and how that style of punk rock, you know, was what Yellow Card did originally. A lot of people don't really know that before, you know, the major label and stuff, you guys were doing the, like, double time, you know, punk rock stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's 2 double time songs on Ocean Avenue.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So but it's an interesting story, actually. That style of music was not my first. I grew up super pop influenced kid. I got my music from MTV and the radio. My parents didn't really put a lot of music in my life, as far as, like, they weren't those parents that were just, like, ripping Beatles and Zeppelin records as a kid, you know? So I found it on my own. And so I was all very influenced by whatever was happening at the time. And I would go through those cycles of records, just buying the records because it was on MTV, you know? And then Nirvana appeared and changed my life, as it did so many other kids. I was 11 years old when Nevermind came out. So it was like, that got me my first guitar. That made me realize, like, there was more to the music than backup dancers and MTV, you know? And which is ironic, because I found Nirvana on MTV, but
of course,
still,
yeah, I know.
It was just so jarring, you know, so alarming to see and hear. And it felt like my parents are going to hate this, so I'm going to love it, you know, I got to love it. And it was that vibe. So my first, like, musical experience and getting together with friends at age 12, 13, and starting to figure out how to play in a band, we were just super grungy, like Nirvana wannabes, really, you know? I mean, that was the thing for a couple years. And I had a friend that I grew up with, a couple years younger than me. Our fathers were business partners, and I had already started. So now, fast forward, I'm like 16, 17 years old. And I had started working summers at my dad's car dealership. And Scott, my buddy, who was a couple years younger than me, he that summer, whether I think it was probably summer 96, he started working there because he was old enough now. He was 14 or whatever. So he starts working the summers and we're hanging out all the time and sneaking off to smoke cigarettes, you know, like with a, like hiding from the cameras so our dads don't see it. You know what I mean? It was great. Good summer times, you know, in Florida summer time. But so one day Scott was like, hey man, you should come hang at my house for my band, like my band's practice. I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. So the first time I ever heard that beat, like the NoFX.
Yeah.
Yes. The first time I ever heard that was in Scott Shad's bonus room at Inspection 12 practice in the summer of 1996. And I still live also, by the way, first time I ever heard that beat was watching a live band play it. And they were good, dude. This band, Inspection 12, for being 15 and 16 year old kids, they were a good band in our hometown. And they were all up in the like Lagwagon, NoFX, melodic, yeah, you know, skate punk thing already.
Yeah.
And so that was it. It just changed. I was like, oh my God, I want all of this. I want to soak up as much of this as I can. So Scott gave me, No Use for a Name, Lech Con Carne, and Propaganda, How to Clean Everything. Those were my first two like punk records that I ever heard.
Awesome.
So I started wearing those out, and then, you know, I just went down the rabbit hole with everyone else. And every Fat Records release, every Epitaph yep. Records release, every yep. Tooth and Nail record release, every show, every band coming through. It was really a big shift for me musically in my life that year when I was 16. And so that's where I started playing in a band in high school that was sounded more like that. Those are all the things that led me to be in Yellow Card, because I started playing shows with bands like Inspection 12 and Yellow Card around town and got to be friends with those dudes. And, you know, I never stopped writing songs. I went out, like you said, I did Craig's Brother after high school. And then I went back to university for a minute, and I was already playing with another group of guys there at Florida State University, where I went for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dudes would come and hang and party on the weekends and stuff, the Yellow Card guys. And that's really how that evolved. It was like, they were like, dude, you're still writing good songs, and we're going to need, you know, we need a guitar. It started out as we need a guitar player. I wasn't originally going to be singing with them. And it was also going to be like a weekend thing, like coming home from school and playing on the weekends in Jacksonville. But that all escalated very quickly. But the moral of the story is that skate punk sound, you know, I owe to my friend.
Oh, yeah.
And so much of my role in Yellow Card, I owe to my friend Scott Shad, who I would be remiss if I didn't say he passed away in 2001. He had juvenile diabetes and he had a car accident in diabetic shock, you know. And there's a lot of Yellow Card material that was written for Scotty, and he was, you know, he was a big part of my life growing up. And I think he died right sort of at the dawn of the Yellow Card California experience. I mean, everyone got out there in like mid February of 2001, and he passed in March. So it was like this time of being affected at a very young age by a very heavy loss. You know, all of us knew him very well. It wasn't just like an acquaintance. He was like a staple in the scene back home, and he was just a dear friend. He was the most badass kid. He was such a positive kid and incredible drummer. He played everything. So anyways, that I think it was very motivating is what I'm trying to say for Yellow Card when Scott died to turn it into something positive. I think it really charged us as a band.
Yeah. That's great. No. I was going to say before you told the story about your friend, and I'm sorry to hear that, was just the skate punk and the fast beat, the double time beat. I was so obsessed with it and that kind of music that I like didn't listen to anything that wasn't fast for years.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I remember even with Lagwagon, two of their like big songs are, you know, like Know It All and Angry Days. They're like two of the slower songs, and I was like, nah, fuck those, I'm skipping them. I want the fast shit, you know. And so it's really funny. So if you ever have time, and you probably won't, and you want to start a skate punk band with me,
you're putting this out in the world.
Yeah, I'm okay, putting you on the spot. Well, I will 100%. I'm not opposed.
And Josh Fortman from Yellow Card is 100% would be in as
all
well.
Right. All right. Yeah. I can play guitar, sing, bass, whatever you need. I got it. I got some leftovers. I got some leftover songs from my skate punk days. They're pretty good. So
I would be down. I would be down to explore that. I'll tell you one thing for sure, that we can get someone to put it out. I know that. Like,
yeah.
If we get the songs recorded, someone will be all over that.
Yeah, so, maybe they'll even let us play at the fest. Who knows, right?
I'm into it. Let's do it. I you know, when I got into it, I was very into it for sure, but I still I like to think at least I had a somewhat like broad kind of palette for music even back then. Like I was still listening to, for every NoFX record I was listening, I was still listening to Radiohead records too. It's like I was really all over the map, and I've been all over the map as a songwriter, I think, through my career, and I think that's why. I think it's because the way I was raised in music was just so like, oh, today Madonna's huge. Well, tomorrow NSYNC is huge. Tomorrow, you know, like just like as a kid. Well, I guess NSYNC was a little after my time, but like, dude, go all the way back to like New Kids on the Block. Even I would say, like, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I was an 8-year-old kid, and they were all over MTV, and nobody was telling me that it wasn't cool. So I'm not even saying that it wasn't cool. I'm just saying that like I was so like, and then like when the '80s, kind of like late '80s, you know, early '90s. Just before Nirvana, like when like Guns N' Roses and all that stuff was just like crushing, you know, on the radio and everything like that, then I worshiped that, you know. It's like, so throughout the years, I just have been like, I think so all over the map with the stuff I like and the stuff that turns me on musically that it's definitely crept into my own songwriting.
Oh, totally. And I mean, you don't hear a lot of, like with my music, you don't hear a lot of skate punk influence, although we do have some double time songs. You know, it's true. Like, I think you get to some point where, like, for me, I was like, you know, 16, 17, 18, and like, was like, nope, punk rock, it's all music is inferior to punk rock. It's all I want to play. And then you hear like the Get Up Kids and you hear like some of that other stuff and you're like, wait a second, there's more out there. Maybe I am too close-minded, you know?
Same day, Get Up Kids, Lifetime, that whole Northeast Jersey kind of movement thing. That was another shift for me too. Yep. Like there was a long period where that was like the style of kind of punk rock that I was like exclusively attracted to.
Oh, man.
I put Lagwagon and NoFX records on the shelf and was just only listening to Saves the Day and Lifetime, you know?
I know. So, like, Can't Slow Down Jersey's Best Dancers, like, those records changed my life completely.
Yeah. So good, man. Like, just, it was such a different, it was familiar because of the beats and the way, you know, the guitar harmonies and palm mutes and all the stuff that goes into that music, but it was so different from the kind of the West Coast, like, Warped Tour skate punk thing that it just was, like, refreshing. I don't know. I loved it.
Exactly, man.
Loved it.
Exactly. Okay, so Ryan and I are starting a skate punk band. That's happening.
Yep. TBD.
speaking of Saves the Day, and I understand that you and Aaron, when you were in the studio recording both your EPs, you had a mantra that was no parents, no rules.
That got said a lot.
I have a no parents, no rules tattoo, actually.
Wow, dude. Well, it's a rune saying. I can't take credit. It's a rune saying. But once it was established, it was said very often because we kind of touched on this, like how this kind of like different side of my musical influence like wasn't able to really be flushed out in full on a Yellow Card record. It just, you know, wouldn't have made sense. So the idea that we are kind of free to do as we wish, you know, on every aspect of the recording, it was just, I don't know, it was really, really liberating in a lot of ways. So,
absolutely.
We would like both of the EPs really got like wherever we were at that day and how we were feeling, what we would write. We were recording it kind of as we went. I didn't go into either session with like, okay, here's 5 songs. Let me sit down and play them for you. We would go with like, okay, that sounds cool. Jump in and record it, you know? And then I'd write a lyric and I'd jump in and sing it. Like it was a very different style of recording than I've ever done, writing recording than I've ever done before.
Yeah, I feel like Yellow Card is one of those bands very like everything's to a grid, everything's super slick, you know, like every line has been calculated, every vocal performance, you know what you're going to do. Whereas with your solo stuff, there's a lot more, I don't know, it's kind of like digital versus analog in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's like a lot more expressive.
Absolutely, and that's why I brought Arun on board, is I wanted his like analog flavor as a co-producer and mixer. I think he delivered in a big way. I mean, so much of what I read about both EPs review wise, and by the way, on that front, I was just so like moved and humbled and blown away. Like the response that both of these records got from a critical standpoint beyond my wildest dreams. You know, like and so many places that like potentially wouldn't have reviewed Yellow Card because either it didn't make sense for their, you know, their publication, or it's just like it's not, you know, it's not in that indie rock world. And so I got a lot of these reviews from places that were new. And one of the things that they talked about a lot was the sonics of the album, and like the basically exactly what we're talking about, just like how, you know, how kind of rough around the edges it feels in a good way. And that's something that was very deliberate throughout the process of recording, was to make sure that it was a little sloppy in a good way. You know
awesome.
What I mean? Like had a little bit of that grit and dirt all over it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So you're turning 40 this year. Sorry to put you on blast. It's a big milestone for everybody, but I know for you, you treat kind of each decade a little bit differently because you're born, you know, right before the start of each one, right? You're born, is that right?
I was born 2 weeks before 1980. So I have every decade of my life is around, you know, 80 to 90, 90 to 2000. Like
exactly.
That.
So how do you feel about 2020?
I feel like there's so much good happening in my world, and so much opportunity ahead of me. And when I gave you that long groaning sigh when you mentioned that I'm turning 40 this year.
Well, you don't look 40 at all.
It's in. Thanks,
you don't look a day over 30.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. It's in jest that I do that, because, you know, I think a lot of stuff we've talked about throughout this whole, like, hang was, I'm not living like I'm not letting my brain tell my body that I'm 40. Like, I'm still just trying to charge it as hard as I can, because this is the time, man. You know, it's like, do I wish that I was starting a new project at 25 instead of, you know, when I started it last year at 38? Yeah, that would have been nice and easier in the van on my back, you know. But but at the same time, it's like I feel like this is my time, and I still feel young, and I still feel full of energy and drive. And as long as I have that, I want to take advantage of it to the absolute fullest. You know, I want to, every opportunity I get to go anywhere in the world, I'm going to take it. Because one day, you know, when this conversation is, you're turning 60 this year, it's, we're not, you know, I'm not gonna be able to do that like anymore. And I'm I love traveling and I love music, and I'm still getting to do both of those things at a very high level. So
yeah,
I don't see myself slowing down at all. If anything, I think 2020 is just going to be like an even crazier, busier year. I mean, I'll have, you know, I'm going to put out a full length record next year. I'm going to probably have two Newfound Glory tours to do, playing guitar with them, and
cool.
And then, you know, touring on my own to support my record as well. So it's like, I already know it's going to be a crazy busy year, and that, you know, it makes me really happy. I mean, that's the thing, that after Yellow Card, we talked about that a little bit too, just kind of the fear of like what happens next.
Yeah.
You look ahead to the next year and you're like, I keep looking ahead. I'm like, so last year, 2018, it turned out to be a really great year for me personally, professionally, you know, financially. It was a very good year. I felt like a lot was accomplished and a lot of positive results happened. And so, but then you go like, well, yeah, but how am I going to do this again without Yellow Card? You know, like, how am I going to reproduce this again next year? Like, piecing all this together, this tour, that tour, that, you know, this little acoustic show, this emo night performance, this, you know, producing this record in Japan, these things. It's like, but then the opportunities just keep coming, and you go, all right. So it's like, you know, I'm halfway through 19 now. And it's already been an incredible year. And I,
wow. Yeah.
So it's like, so I feel like, hopefully, you know, I don't know if I want that to go away, that feeling of like, well, shit, how am I going to do this next year? Cause I think it's like kind of motivating, you know? But at the same time, it's also like, if the next few years continue to progress the way the last couple have, then I think at some point it will, you know, settle in, and there won't be that like gritting of teeth of like, how am I going to do this again next year?
Right, man.
So I think, you know, most important thing for next year is putting out my first full length record, and seeing where that takes this project.
And that's the one that people are going to notice. So it's, you got to put a lot of work into that, I'm sure. Are you going to work with Arun again for that?
Probably. Yeah. Cool. Well, there's like no plans as far as what's going to happen. So I have a really, really great recording studio set up here in Nashville. it's like kind of the second floor of my house is the studio. It's like all studio space. And I'm going to be moving at some point this year. I'm selling my house here and blah, 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 all that. So I'm staying in Nashville, but I'm just going to be relocating within the city. So we don't have like a set plan yet, cause I'm going to have to get the studio all rewired, reset up and, you know, figure out where I'm going and that kind of stuff. So,
all right.
Once that's all settled, though, I think like January, February recording is probably what we're looking at if we can make it happen.
Awesome.
And then, yeah, so
it'll be here before you know it,
dude. I know, and I'll be 40.
Well, you called the other record 13. You're gonna call that one 40?
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe.
I don't think so. So, do you remember the song we did together, the Stay Posse song?
Yeah. I mean, it's been many years now.
It's been many years, but it's funny because we never actually like spoke about it. We never like met up.
It was all a transfer of file. It was back to what we started. That's a great way to kind of like bring this in at the end because we started talking about like the digital age beginning of this. Like that recording was the most digital like 2000 and whatever year it was, like
2010 I think.
We'll email you the song, you sing it and email it back to us. Like the future, man, that's the future.
I know, it was so weird. It was the fact that I never spoke to you. Like I never was like, hey man, like this is the song and it's about this and like if you could kind of do this. It was literally just like we never had any contact.
Why was that though?
I don't know. I think for it was really weird because The song kind of got lost in the shuffle too, which I'm sort of sad about because I thought it was kind of a fun song, but
yeah.
it was on one of those Hopeless Records, Hopelessly Devoted to You, or Take Action comps or something like that.
So,
back in the day, comps were huge, right? Like, you know, all the Fat Records comps, we talk about, you know, Epitaph and all those labels. So this was kind of the end of that era where comps weren't a thing anymore. So this ended up being track one on the comp.
Yeah, you just make playlists now. And that's your comp.
Exactly. But this was kind of like the era where it was still sort of working, but it got lost in the shuffle, and it's too bad. But I think Hopeless needed it. Like, they needed it before they needed the rest of our record.
Right.
You know, for a deadline. So we were, like, scrambling to get it done and everything. So that's what happened. But I'm going to play the song at the end of the episode so people can check it out with our lovely voices together.
And none of that will matter once we start the skate punk band. So,
No, this isn't starting to sound anything like that. Come on. It's going to be way faster.
Yeah.
All right. Before I let you go, I got a couple fan questions if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, Brendan Potter asks, he has a lot of questions about Big If.
Okay.
When Yellow Card went on hiatus, he started Big If, and it was phenomenal. Some of those songs actually made their way onto the next Yellow Card album when they got back together. He was excited to... Sorry, I should have read this first.
That's all right.
He was excited to get Big If back. Why did he start a solo stuff instead of doing something like Big If again? And is Big If ever a possibility again? Big If is such a weird thing to insert as a name, by the way, when you're reading. But go on.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a project that I started with... one of my like longest, closest, lifelong friends, who I met through Craig's brother, actually.
Oh yeah.
My friend Sean O'Donnell was the like one of the songwriters and guitar player for another Tooth and Nail band called Dogwood. If you like that beat, you need to go listen to those old Dogwood records because it's like the fastest, gnarliest, nonstop. they had some really cool songs, but on the last couple, the newer record they made, they had some ripping songs. But anyways, Craig's brother toured with them in 1999, that summer, and through the label and stuff. So I met Sean, we stayed friends, and then we stayed like really close friends. And he had a band called Revolver that also is an incredible band.
Yeah.
That got signed to Capitol shortly after we did and never panned out, but amazing band. He's just such a good songwriter. So I loved Reeve and I was really on the team of like helping them get going and like introducing them to Capitol and all that stuff. And then when the band took a break, he wasn't playing with Reeve anymore. And we'd always wanted to do something together musically, more me, I think, than him. I don't know if he would agree or whatever, but I was such a fanboy of his song and like his voice. And so like, I was stoked to record some stuff with you. And that was it. We were just going to write, record some stuff and see what it turned into. And it did get a little traction. Like, I had a couple of people in, like, in the business, you know, that heard some of the songs and were like, this is great. We should definitely keep going, keep writing. And that kept us going. And so we kept, like, writing and demoing more songs. And we kind of, you know, we started MySpace was still a thing.
Yeah.
So we had a page, you know, with some of the songs on it. And we never even had any real drums recorded, though. We programmed all the drums and Ryan Mendez just mixed them in to sound pretty legit, honestly. So we just started this thing, and it was really about just our friendship, I think, though, in the end. And, you know, we had an amazing time writing and working. Ryan worked with us a lot on it, too, Ryan from Yellow Card. And so whether it, I don't see it being something that comes back again. Sean's got three kids now and he's really happy and in an amazing place in his life. And, we've talked about doing in the same way that you and I kind of just like, oh yeah, let's do that. We've talked about doing like a full on like Pumpkin style 90s kind of alternative grunge project. Like, we've always wanted to do that as well. So we talked about maybe just doing that for fun too, but you know, man, it's just so much going on. It's tough to find the time when we live on the opposite coast and stuff, but
it sure is.
Love Sean. And Sean has a I'll give a little plug here. Sean has a solo record called Spirit Junkie. That's amazing that he put out, a year and a half ago, something like that. And he got to be on he actually played, the final Yellow Card shows with us opening up, solo.
Oh, cool.
So
very cool.
Check out his record, Spirit Junkie. It's awesome.
All right. Spirit Junkie. I will. And they will too. All right, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time. Anything else to tell the people? Anything else to add? I know you got a tour coming up.
I am head. Yeah. But this tour that I'm about to go on is going to be the most carefree, low stress environment on the road I've ever experienced in my life. I'm playing guitar with Newfound Glory for 90 minutes a night, and that's it. That's my responsibility. So I get a tour bus, you know, I get hotels on days off, and I get to play for 2,000 people a night or whatever it's going to be. And like, that's my only responsibility. So after the gauntlet we discussed,
it's a vacation.
I am very excited to just get on the bus with my buds and relax and have fun playing guitar, you know? So we leave for England, next weekend for a Slam Dunk festival. And then we're out until like July 14th. And then I don't know what happens after that. I'm going to Sweden for a good friend's wedding right after the tour ends, and then get back here and figure out what the next move is.
I had some shows in the summer here. I'm looking at them now.
You know what? I did, and I just announced them. And it's what time is it in Japan right now? My brain is not functioning at full
about 12 hours. I don't know.
Yeah, so I have I just announced a week of shows and like running up from North Carolina through the Northeast.
Yeah.
So we're doing kind of a cool thing that is going to tie into the full length as well on the tour, which I don't have all the details yet, so I can't like describe it to you. But I would say like anyone who's in the area, check the dates, come to the shows, because it's going to be a vibe for
cool.
sure.
Cool. I mean, really Very cool. cool. And Very
I'm,
cool.
I'm going to play both. I'm going to play both EPs in full on those shows. So it'll be a little different than the last tour. Like, I think I'm just going to start with the first song and play through to the last song, and that's kind of going to be the show. So, cool. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And then after those shows, I'm pretty open to, I think there may be some more Newfound stuff later in the year, but I'm not 100% sure yet. So
awesome. Yeah, man. Awesome, man.
Busy, busy,
busy, busy, but I love it. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, and, all the best, man. So just let me know when to send over some demos for our band. Okay.
Okay, yeah, well, we just need to figure out when we should get together for practice.
Perfect.
But I'll figure it out, and I'll let you know.
Dude, thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate it, man.
All right, bud. I'll talk to you soon. Cheers. Thank you.
So there it is with Ryan Key, and I want to thank him so much for taking time out of his gauntlet of a schedule to speak with me and also consider starting a punk band with me. Hey, you never know, right? Things like this have happened in stranger ways, but I do want to thank you for tuning in to this, listening to this, listening to all the other episodes of the podcast you've listened to, for checking it out, for subscribing, for telling a friend, for telling a loved one, for joining the All Access Club. Whatever it is you're doing to help me out in any way, it really does mean a lot. So yes, we have another great guest next week. I don't want to spill the beans on this one because I haven't recorded it yet, and sometimes things happen, but we have another big guest next week, so please make sure you do check it out. And And really, it just warms my heart that I'm able to do this show. What is it? 3.5 years later? Blows my mind. And it really is so much fun for me to bring this to you every single week. So I'm going to play the song that Ryan and I did together. It's a Silverstein B-side. It's called Stay Posy. But first, I got to play you some William Ryan Key solo material. And first of all, check out his stuff. Whether you're a fan of Yellow Card or not, it really doesn't matter because these are just great tunes. So I'm going to play the banger, the Silverstein banger later. But here is a William Ryan Key solo track. It's called Downtown. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome.
You just appeared, a sweet apparition. When I was so sure what I had become. We dressed in black, went out on the water. Sky was on fire, and I was undone. I'll be waiting downtown, hoping you do me in. Sirens singing with me while I lose you again. I may be tired all these years lost in love, but I'll be waiting downtown while you leave just enough. Leave too much more, and I'll stay up north. Walking you home, you stopped on the corner, reached out your arm, flew off in the night. I've had some smoke and mirrors around me, but never been lost like I get in your eyes. I get in your eyes. I'll be waiting downtown, hoping you do me in. Sirens singing with me while I lose you again. I may be tired all these years lost in love, but I'll be waiting downtown while you leave just enough. Leave too much more, and I'll stay up north.
So there is Downtown by William Ryan Key. And before I play the Silverstein Ryan Key collab song, I want to reflect back on my memory of this. We talk a little bit about it in the podcast, and I think what I said was mostly correct, but we had just signed to Hopeless Records, and they wanted us to be, you know, their big splash, their big new band, and they had the Take Action comp coming out, and they wanted us to be the first song. And they'd had, you know, some success, but they wanted it to be a song that wasn't available anywhere else, you know, an exclusive track. So we had a bunch of songs we were recording for our album Rescue, and we thought this song maybe didn't quite fit with the rest. You'll hear it. It's a little bit poppy for us. And I had the idea to make this song kind of a duet, you know, with two different lead vocalists in the song. And I remember asking so many people if they were down to do this song. And I don't want to name names, but so many people ended up flaking. And it was getting later, and it was getting later, and somebody couldn't do it, and someone else's label said they couldn't do it. And I don't remember where it came from, but somebody was like, yo, you should just ask Ryan from Yellow Card to do it. I think he'd be into it. And I was like, Ryan from Yellow Card? Like, he's huge. Like, there's no way he's just going to want to do this. Like, I don't know him. So he was like, oh, no, I got his manager's contact. Let me get in touch. Literally, like, 3 days later, he sent over the song and it was done. And I was like, that is a pro, man, right there. And then, like, 9 years later, we're speaking on the phone. Never met him before until today. So it is really funny how this stuff can work in the music industry. But shout out to Ryan Key for being the man. Here it is. Stay posy on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week. The city never sleeps, just like you and me. We're singing, whoa, whoa. We'd never have to leave. The sun is never coming up. Broken bottles line the streets we walked last night, and it's starting to come back to me. Yeah, it's starting to come back to me. Started at the perfect point, and then after that I find it's all a blur with the smashing of glass and the sound of the clash. I feel ringing loud inside my head. The city never sleeps, just like you and me. We're singing, whoa, whoa, whoa. If it was up to me, we'd never have to leave. The sun is never coming up. You said it yourself, you stalked me. Your bad tattoos and your fishnet stockings. But tonight, 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 it's just me and my friends, and we're way out of sight. Don't think I'll make. Like you and me, we're singing.